Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News. Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, welcome back to the nation's capital.
Thank you very much, Ken. You know what else? I'm really excited about this week's podcast.
Why is that?
Oh, you know why. You know why. Two words. Bloomberg fever. The country is in a mania. The country cannot contain its enthusiasm for a 5'7" Jewish mayor from New York City.
I was going to say, you know political trivia, right? When was the last time a multi-billionaire Jewish dwarf was elected president? Go! Ron Elving.
No, his name wouldn't have been Ron Elving. I'm thinking Ross Perot, and I didn't know until this very moment
Jewish?
That Ross Perot was Jewish. No, but I do remember David Letterman had a very good line about why Ross Perot was so powerful and so popular. At his height, at his zenith.
Oh, at his height, excellent.
At his zenith,
excellent.
I should say.
He's on my short
at
list.
The apogee of his fame. Uh-huh. And that was that the entire country was gripped with an increasing conviction that everything should be run by a tiny, insane billionaire. And I think we're still gripped. All right, what happened this week? Michael Bloomberg was pleased to drop out of the Republican Party.
He announced he's leaving the GOP to become an unaffiliated voter.
He is a person... unaffiliated with any party.
He insists that he's not going. This does not mean he's going to run for president in 2008.
Oh, no. It has nothing to do with running for president.
Right.
No. This is the circumstance under which he would run for president.
If everybody in the world was dead and I was the only one alive yet, sure. I mean, come on.
That's funny because that's pretty much the only circumstance under which I would vote for you for president.
Wait, Niedermeyer?
Need him what? Dead.
Here's the thing, though. Why, if you're not going to run for president, why switch parties? Why bother?
He didn't switch parties, Ken.
He left the Republic. Why leave a party?
He disaffiliated himself. When was the last time we elected a president who had disaffiliated himself?
In public?
In public.
Who was the last mayor of New York to switch parties while mayor?
John Lindsay?
That's correct.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question for you, Ken.
Do you?
If Mike Bloomberg runs for president, no one else has asked this question.
Who does he hurt?
Besides Mike Bloomberg, who does he do more damage to, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party?
I think that's true. I think, what's interesting is that for some reason, a lot of people say he hurts the Republican Party.
Let's go back and do that with, like, English grammar.
No. How is your grammar? No. I think we keep it as it is. We're not editing this stuff. Okay, so I think he hurts Rudy Giuliani. First of all, Michael Bloomberg wouldn't exist if it weren't for Rudy Giuliani.
Hey, let's talk about politics and loyalty, shall we?
Okay.
Who was it who endorsed Mike Bloomberg and kind of made him mayor back in 2001? Wasn't that Rudy Giuliani?
Was that the thing I just was talking about that you interrupted me?
Oh, I always wanted to introduce the idea of loyalty.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, the way I'm loyal to you.
Right. You know, there's no such thing as loyalty. No, I just made that up.
So I understand that in politics.
Right after 9/11, Rudy Giuliani, at the apex of his popularity, endorsed Michael Bloomberg. Now, of course, Bloomberg did spend $75-80 million of his own money, but there was still no reason he would have won. Giuliani endorsed him, campaigned for him. Big upset in 2001, Michael Bloomberg. So, I mean, here you have, if anybody is going to be hurt initially by this, it's Rudy Giuliani, whose stewardship of New York City after 9/11.
Would now be in dispute, because the question is who gets credit for all the good stuff.
Exactly. But ultimately, given the fact that Michael Bloomberg is pro-gay marriage, let alone gay rights, he's anti-gun rights, he's pro-abortion rights, he is talks about global warming. These are positions...
They basically have the same program.
As the Democratic Party.
Well, they have the same program as the Democrats on those social issues.
Yeah.
But if you look across the whole spectrum of, say, New York City issues, and these two guys are going to agree on virtually all of it. So, yeah, he would seem to hurt Rudy Giuliani, but only if Rudy Giuliani is the nominee. And don't we expect that Bloomberg will wait to see who the nominees are before he gets in or doesn't?
That's exactly right. I mean, there's no deadline. He doesn't have to enter the Ames straw poll on August 11th. He doesn't have to go into Iowa, New Hampshire.
It's a laugh just to think of him going to Ames,
Iowa.
I know.
Ready, Ames.
Yeah.
So he probably won't announce anything, if at all, until February when we see who the likely Democratic Republican nominees are.
Right.
Now, there is a theory out there that, for example, if Barack Obama were the Democratic nominee, would Michael Bloomberg want to step in and, you know, take the thunder away from the first African-American nominee in history? I suspect not.
But the first woman in history?
Barack Obama?
No. What about Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I know. Well, I wonder.
Hillary Clinton, the other person who might get the Democratic nomination. We've talked about her. You've seen her on TV.
She's from New York.
As a matter of fact, what we're talking about here is a third-party candidate who might actually be the third New York liberal running for president.
Right.
So you can actually imagine that the United States would have a presidential election consisting of three New York liberals. I just don't think that's what's going to happen. He's not going to get in the race under those circumstances. Probably Rudy Giuliani isn't going to be the nominee in the first place. Does he get in if Mitt Romney is the nominee?
Yeah. No, I think he does run. Otherwise, why switch parties? Why have his aides ostensibly been looking at the state laws all these last couple of weeks, how to get on the ballot, when to get on the ballot?
Let me give you a theory.
Okay.
He's not going to run.
Okay.
This is theory because he may, but he's not going to run. And the reason, in answer to your question.
I didn't ask a question.
You did. You said, why?
Oh, yeah.
You said, why?
I guess that's a question.
That's the question I'm
why?
Answering. And
MCA?
The question, the answer to the question is, because it's fun. It's more fun to be out there on the front page of all the newspapers.
Everywhere.
Certainly on the front page of the New York newspapers. Bigger, hotter all of a sudden than Rudy or Hillary.
Right.
Which, let's face it, for the last 4 or 5 months, he's been slipping in the media standings in his own city. Even Chuck Schumer's been a hotter story than Mike Bloomberg for the last 5, 6 months. That is scary. And as a result, he's tired of that, and he wants to get back on top. And he's done it. He's done it with this one little announcement, not that he's running for president, but just that he's disaffiliated from the Republican Party, and suddenly we're devoting the entire podcast to him.
The funny thing is that he's
And that's what he wanted to do.
He's not a great campaigner. He's not an exciting. He doesn't give an exciting speech at all.
Ken, Monday night in Los Angeles, I happen to be attending this conference along with Mike and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Angelica Houston and a few other people. And he gave a speech on Monday night to a dinner gathering at the mayor's home, the Getty House, there in Los Angeles. About 200 people sitting in round tables, at round tables, lots and lots of round tables. The people whose chairs were facing away from the stage, facing toward the table, they didn't turn their chairs around to watch him give the speech. Mm. He gave the speech for 28 minutes and 30 seconds, and they did not turn their chairs around to see him. That's how exciting a speaker he is.
Okay, third-party trivia. Who got the most votes as an independent candidate in history?
Well, I would assume it would have to be Ross Perot.
That's correct.
19% of the vote in 1992.
And who got the most percentage of the vote in history?
That would probably be Theodore Roosevelt.
That is correct.
In 1912.
Unbelievable.
All right, and here's an interesting question.
I doubt it.
Who was the last person to get electoral college votes as a third-party candidate?
Well, most people would say George Wallace in 1968, but John Hospers, the Libertarian Party candidate, got a, what do you call it,
a faithless elector
in 1970.
Yes. Right. And that's very interesting, Ken. That's why we keep you around. But let me ask you this question then. When was the last person who actually earned electoral college delegates?
Besides George Wallace?
No, it was George Wallace in 1968, and he got, what, 40-some?
Right, won four or five states in the South.
Okay.
Right? Third-party candidate.
If Michael Bloomberg could do even that well, he would probably have the capability of throwing the election into the House of Representatives, would he not? Because he would deny either the Republican or the Democratic candidate a majority in the Electoral College.
But then we go back to Ross Perot, who, as you say, got 19 million votes, the most in history. How many states did he carry? How many electoral votes
did
he win?
Zero. Exactly. He didn't even get close.
Right.
I mean, I think the best he did was Alaska or Idaho.
Maine. He finished second in Maine.
Yeah. He finished ahead of George W. Bush.
That's right.
In the state.
H.W.
Bush in the state where George H.W. Bush spent his summers.
Right.
Maybe if he'd spent his whole year there, he would have done a little better.
Remember the Maine.
Speaking of McCain, and I think we were, John McCain, the candidate for president from, I believe the state is Arizona, who was a very hot candidate for a while in 2000 and was supposed to be the front-running candidate for 2008, a guy whom we all had thought was going to be a very major factor in the 2008
If not the nominee.
Yeah, I mean, very respectable people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate were believing the guy was going to get the nomination in 2008, but he continues to fade. Here we are in June of 2007. He's down to single digits in Iowa. He is not really the force that he was in New Hampshire. His fundraising is expected to be lackluster for a second quarter in a row. Is it possible McCain doesn't even make it to the starting gate?
I don't think so, but you will see at the end of the month when you have the second quarter financial figures, you'll see a lot of headlines questioning whether McCain is still relevant, and that's remarkable to see. But, you know, I mean, for all, I find myself more and more sympathetic to the John McCain candidacy as I read about him. But having the two issues he's most identified with is the very unpopular war in Iraq and the very unpopular with Republican audiences, immigration compromise overhaul, whatever you want to call it. And if these are going to be the two issues he's going to base his candidacy on, how does he go forward?
Plus, as I'm sure many of the listeners have heard the story. I've heard the story that Fred Thompson, who was originally supporting McCain for 2008 and making fundraising phone calls for him, was hearing from so many of the people he tried to dun for money for McCain that they were never going to give to John, and that John was dead to them. Niedermeyer, dead. That he decided he might as well get in and run himself.
Remarkable. It reminds me, of course, as it reminds a lot of people, of Ed Muskie. Remember him?
I do indeed.
I hate talking about something that people care about. I like to talk about things that people don't care about.
Let's go all the way back to 1972, Ken.
We're here in Manchester, New Hampshire, and Ed Muskie is crying on the steps of the Manchester Union Leader.
He's talking about my wife.
He's talking about his wife, Jane, and me, Tarzan. Okay.
At least we don't have to read the newspaper anymore because we can go to YouTube like the rest of America. And I was personally thrilled and I think a little gratified that Hillary Clinton decided that having asked visitors to her site to choose her campaign song, when they chose a song by Celine Dion, maybe not your favorite or mine, Ken, maybe not Hillary's, maybe not Bill's, but that's the people's choice, she stuck with the people's choice. And I was touched by that. I think Hillary indeed wants to be a woman of the people, after all.
Now, I read somewhere it was E.J. Dionne. It's not that's incorrect?
I think somebody in the family might have thought it was E.J. Dionne's song.
And it's quintuplets.
That we were talking about. But I will give them credit for this. Whatever else you want to say about the Clintons, I like their new video that's a parody of the last episode of The Sopranos, which was a television program on HBO about mobster skin. Let's listen to just a little snippet of that video.
So what's the winning song?
You'll see.
My money's on Smash Mouth. Everybody in America wants to know how it's going to end.
Ready?
That's it for this week's political podcast. We've had the dead air now, Ken. You can go ahead and read your
comments. Oh, sorry. You could...
I have to work with idiots.
You can follow NPR's political coverage, the funny part anyway, at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. All right, all we need is a little silence. Just give me 10 seconds here. That's it. Come on, we can do this. All right? That's it for this week's political podcast. One more time. Okay. This is going to be it, all right? That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR political coverage
at npr.org/politics. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. You're fired. You are so fired.